The Search. Jobs's interest in Eastern spirituality, Hinduism, Zen Buddhism, and the search for enlightenment was not merely the passing phase of a 19-year-old. Throughout his life, he would seek to follow many of the basic precepts of Eastern religions, such as the emphasis on experiential prajna, wisdom, or cognitive understanding that is intuitively experienced through concentration of the mind. Years later, sitting in his Palo Alto garden, he reflected on the lasting influence of his trip to India. "Coming back to America was for me much more of a cultural shock than going to India. The people in the Indian countryside don't use their intellect like we do. They use their intuition instead, and their intuition is far more developed than in the rest of the world. Intuition is a very powerful thing, more powerful than intellect, in my opinion. That's had a big impact on my work." Western rational thought is not an innate human characteristic. It is learned and is the great achievement of Western civilization. In the villages of India, they never learned it. They learned something else, which is in some ways just as valuable, but in other ways is not. That's the power of intuition and experiential wisdom. Coming back after 7 months in Indian villages, I saw the craziness of the Western world as well as its capacity for rational thought. If you just sit and observe, you will see how restless your mind is. If you try to calm it, it only makes it worse. But over time, it does calm. And when it does, there's room to hear more subtle things. That's when your intuition starts to blossom and you start to see things more clearly and be in the present more. Your mind just slows down, and you see a tremendous expanse in the moment. You see so much more than you could see before. It's a discipline. You have to practice it. Zen has been a deep influence in my life ever since. At one point, I was thinking about going to Japan and trying to get into the Iheji Monastery, but my spiritual advisor urged me to stay here. He said there is nothing over there that isn't here. And he was correct. I learned the truth of the Zen saying that if you are willing to travel around the world to meet a teacher, one will appear next door. Jobs did in fact find a teacher right in his own neighborhood. Shunryu Suzuki, who wrote Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and ran the San Francisco Zen Center, used to come to Los Altos every Wednesday evening to lecture and meditate with a small group of followers. After a while, he asked his assistant, Koban Chino Atagawa, to open a full-time center there. Jobs became a faithful follower, along with his occasional girlfriend, Chris Ann Brennan, and Daniel Kottke and Elizabeth Holmes. He also began to go by himself on retreats to the Tassajara Zen Center, a monastery near Carmel, where Koban also taught. Kottke found Koban amusing. His English was atrocious, he recalled. He would speak in a kind of haiku with poetic, suggestive phrases. We would sit and listen to him, and half the time we had no idea what he was going on about. I took the whole thing as a kind of lighthearted interlude. Holmes was more into the scene. We would go to Koban's meditations, sit on zafu cushions, and he would sit on a dais, she said. We learned how to tune out distractions. It was a magical thing. One evening, we were meditating with Koban when it was raining, and he taught us how to use ambient sounds to bring us back to focus on our meditation. As for Jobs, his devotion was intense. He became really serious and self-important and just generally unbearable, according to Kottke. He began meeting with Koban almost daily, and every few months they went on retreats together to meditate. I ended up spending as much time as I could with him, Jobs recalled. He had a wife who was a nurse at Stanford and two kids. She worked the night shift, so I would go over and hang out with him in the evenings. She would get home about midnight and shoo me away. They sometimes discuss whether Jobs should devote himself fully to spiritual pursuits, but Koban counseled otherwise. He assured Jobs that he could keep in touch with his spiritual side while working in a business. The relationship turned out to be lasting and deep. 17 years later, Coben would perform Jobs' wedding ceremony. Jobs' compulsive search for self-awareness also led him to undergo primal scream therapy, which had recently been developed and popularized by a Los Angeles psychotherapist named Arthur Janov. It was based on the Freudian theory that psychological problems are caused by the repressed pains of childhood. Janov argued that they could be resolved by re-suffering these primal moments while fully expressing the pain, sometimes in screams. To Jobs, this seemed preferable to talk therapy because it involved intuitive feeling and emotional action rather than just rational analyzing. This was not something to think about, he later said. This was something to do, to close your eyes, hold your breath, jump in, and come out the other end more insightful. A group of Janov's adherents ran a program called the Oregon Feeling Center in an old hotel in Eugene that was managed by Jobs's Reed College guru, Robert Friedland, whose all-one-farm commune was nearby. In late 1974, Jobs signed up for a 12-week course of therapy there, costing $1,000. Steve and I were both into personal growth, so I wanted to go with him, Kottke recounted, but I couldn't afford it. Jobs confided to close friends that he was driven by the pain he was feeling about being put up for adoption and not knowing about his birth parents. Steve had a very profound desire to know his physical parents so he could better know himself, Friedland later said. He had learned from Paul and Clara Jobs that his birth parents had both been graduate students at a university and that his father might be Syrian. He had even thought about hiring a private investigator, but he decided not to do so for the time being. I didn't want to hurt my parents, he recalled, referring to Paul and Clara. He was struggling with the fact that he had been adopted, according to Elizabeth Holmes. He felt that it was an issue that he needed to get hold of emotionally. Jobs admitted as much to her. This is something that is bothering me, and I need to focus on it, he said. He was even more open with Greg Calhoun. He was doing a lot of soul-searching about being adopted, and he talked about it with me a lot, Calhoun recalled. The primal scream and the mucusless diets, he was trying to cleanse himself and get deeper into his frustration about his birth. He told me he was deeply angry about the fact that he had been given up. John Lennon had undergone the same primal scream therapy in 1970, and in December of that year he released the song Mother with the Plastic Ono Band. It dealt with Lennon's own feelings about a father who had abandoned him and a mother who had been killed when he was a teenager. The refrain includes the haunting chant, Mama don't go, Daddy come home. Jobs used to play the song often. Jobs later said that Janov's teachings did not prove very useful. He offered a ready-made, button-down answer, which turned out to be far too oversimplistic. It became obvious that it was not going to yield any great insight. But Holmes contended that it made him more confident. After he did it, he was in a different place. He had a very abrasive personality, but there was a peace about him for a while. His confidence improved, and his feelings of inadequacy were reduced. Jobs came to believe that he could impart that feeling of confidence to others and thus push them to do things they hadn't thought possible. Holmes had broken up with Kottke and joined a religious cult in San Francisco that expected her to sever ties with all past friends. But Jobs rejected that injunction. He arrived at the cult house in his Ford Ranchero one day and announced that he was driving up to Friedland's apple farm and she was to come. Even more brazenly, he said she would have to drive part of the way, even though she didn't know how to use the stick shift. Once we got on the open road, he made me get behind the wheel and he shifted the car until we got up to 55 miles per hour, she recalled. Then he puts on a tape of Dylan's Blood on the Tracks, lays his head in my lap, and goes to sleep. He had the attitude that he could do anything, and therefore so can you. He put his life in my hands, so that made me do something I didn't think I could do. It was the brighter side of what would become known as his reality distortion field. If you trust him, you can do things, Holmes said. If he's decided that something should happen, then he's just going to make it happen.